Hi guys, so we wanted to let you know that the opinions and thoughts shared in our podcast are our very own. Even though we work for Mental Health America, the issues, experiences, and advice we discuss are a reflection of our own personal experiences. Each podcast is a snippet of the issue and not a comprehensive overview. We hope that taken together, the In the Open podcast addresses many of the needs and concerns shared by people accessing our resources. So listen and connect with us.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, guys. It's America from In the Open. And we wanted to tell you a little bit about Mental Health America and who this organization is that we work for. So Mental Health America has been around since 1909. We're really old, but really great looking. That's what I always say. People love that joke. Teresa, you're supposed to laugh at that.
I'm supposed to laugh out loud.
But so we're going to be 110 this year on February 19th, which is pretty amazing. We were founded by an old white guy. That's what I like to call him, Clifford W. Beers, which if you can imagine in the 1900s, he was really a leader and helping people understand that individuals living with mental illnesses should not be mistreated, had to be respected. And because of his personal experience with everything dealing with mental health issues, which it's likely that he would have been dealing with bipolar disorder now. Back then it was manic depression. But he was hospitalized, which led him to have a very unique experience in really living through what it was to be in an asylum in the 1900s. And he decided to write a book and tell his story about that experience. But his family and friends were totally like, dude, you can't do that. You're going to mess up our name, your reputation. And he decided to go on and do it anyways. And part of his book really talks about what it is to fight in the open and let others know your story so that people aren't isolated and they're not mistreated. So fight in the open continues to be our motto, hence our podcast, In the Open. And we're really excited.
Yeah, I mean, Clifford Beers, he was ahead of his time. I know that we have some old pictures from the early times of asylum days. And he essentially went into this space and was like, what the hell? Like, you can't literally treat people like that. And some of the pictures that we have are horrendous, right? People are naked, they're shackled up, people are ignored. And I think this starts the story for us about why we give a crap about the way people are treated who have mental health problems. So there's a whole part of who MHA is that starts from what is called the consumer or client person with lived experience movement that's about just being fiercely protective about your individual rights if you struggle with a mental health problem. A mental health problem is so scary because it feels like so many things can get taken from you and it feels out of control. And what I love about MHA is it's really about, like, you are in control. You're a person. Mental illness doesn't define who you are. It's something that happens to you and it's your life, but you're not schizophrenic, right? Like, we've battled this thing forever. And I love that about the story, about who we are. So fiercely protecting my autonomy and my dignity as a human being. And we just see so much of that crap happening all the time for people, especially who struggle with really serious mental health problems, who become homeless. The way that we know mental illnesses can break apart families and just, it can kind of wreak a havoc on your life. But in the end, the most important thing is that the best way to get better is to feel like you have say in how you should get better. And for me, I loved that part of the mission and who MHA was. I feel like the people that I meet from MHAs across the country are fierce truth tellers. They're just who they are, and they've dealt with a lot of crap. And so after you've been through that, you're just going to try and just be who you are and not try to be someone else. And that takes a lot of suffering, but a lot of healing. So I love our network. So if you've heard of MHA, in your city or something, you might have heard us as the National Mental Health Association, or you have a mental health association or a Mental Health America of something, because we have 200 affiliates across the country who are members of our organization. And here at MHA National, we kind of take a look at the whole big picture and kind of bringing everybody together around shared interests and shared storytelling.
I think that's amazing. One of the things that is very interesting about our organization is that we don't just focus on the illness part of things, because mental health is important to all of us. And because life ebbs and flows, we're good, we're bad, we're sad, we're happy. Mental Health America is really good at kind of addressing all of those different issues and just kind of helping you deal with the reality of what it is to just be, which can be very hard. And I think Clifford Beers owned that. And he really started this really international movement, right? Because back then it was called the Mental Health Hygiene Movement, which is hilarious, but that's what it was. And he went all over the world with this message, and we continue to exist. And over 100-year history, we have been able to actively engage in whatever is relevant during that time frame. So if you can imagine, in the early 1900s, our focus was about trying to get individuals within asylums to be treated fairly, which is a hard job to do. And then, like, when you move into like the 50s and the 60s, we worked alongside the Kennedys and things when, you know, the people were coming back into the communities, because we wanted to make sure that they were not ostracized, that anybody living with a mental health condition could continue to be part and be a thriving member of the community. So I think our mission is very broad. Now we focus on what we call before stage four, which essentially is getting people to understand that mental illnesses shouldn't be ignored until the crisis point. People know stuff is happening to them way before they go and get help. And ideally, they don't wait until that stage four of crisis to go and get help. So we're kind of hoping to change the game and getting people to understand that. So I think we're a great company to work for.
Yeah, the mental hygiene movement. It sounds so antiquated, but I guess that eventually turned into mental health. We should talk about the bell, because I think it's just such a really cool symbol, and you see that everywhere with MHA and why we care about it so much. But the bell was cast in the early 1950s. And what essentially happened was we were really fighting as an organization back then to close asylums, because people were really being mistreated in asylums, and we really wanted people to be treated in the community and close to their family and whatever. So our company or organization worked to close down some of those asylums, especially the ones that were really bad. And when they did, they were going to throw away all of the chains and the shackles that they had used to hold people down. And instead, we asked them to send them to us, which they did. And we melted them down to make what we call the mental health bell. And for us, it's a sign of hope that things will get better. And on the bell, there's an inscription, and it says, "Cast from shackles which bound them, this bell shall ring out hope for the mentally ill and victory over mental illness."
Yeah, so this bell sits in the lobby of the national office in Alexandria, Virginia. So if you're ever in the area, you can stop by. We ring it every year at our annual conference in June. And really have a moment of silence, you know, to recognize the people that may have been lost due to mental illness, and to also continue to help others understand that our struggles aren't over. We have to continuously talk about these issues to enable people to feel that they are not alone and that it's okay to go and get help. But it's really powerful. It's a huge bell. It's amazing. We see it every day when we come into the office. And when we ring it, it's really powerful. If you can join us at our conference one year, do it. You can hear the bell ring.
Didn't you guys ring it and like crash a giant hole in the wall?
Yeah, it was rung at our old office. And it was the person who rang it didn't know that they had to pull it away from the wall. And then sure enough, it what rammed into the wall. A little bit, not a lot.
That's awesome.
But yes.
See, my story is better. It created a giant hole.
A humongous hole.
That should be the story.
The size of the bell.
Yeah, huge. Okay, so yeah, that's basically MHA and Greer family. I love my MHA family. In my journey of my work life and my personhood life, I found MHA and felt like I was home. And I literally have tried to work other places where I like people that I work with, and I found pockets of meaningful personal relationships. But really, MHA has always felt like home. And it seems like it's the only place where I can be myself, which says a lot, I think, about who we are and what we bring when we come to work. And just that seems to be reflective of everybody I meet from MHA.
Yeah. And it's not just MHA national. I think that's reflective of the MHA network as a whole.
Oh yeah. No, I mean the whole MHA family. So let's talk about us. Cause who the heck are we? Like, who is America and who is Teresa, and why do we get to talk to you?
Well, because
we chose to.
We are actively making the decision to do this, and it's
to be ridiculous.
To be not ridiculous. We are actively choosing to be connected to you guys in this way because we know that it's a great way to connect with people. So what we did, so you guys know, is because it's hard to talk about yourself for many reasons, we decided to write down 4 things that we think are important that you should know about us. So we're going to share and then we'll chat. So Teresa, what are your 4 things?
Well, to be fair, it's funny that you asked us to fill out 5 things, and both neither you or I could figure out what a 5th thing was. So we should end with what that says about us. But we should do this one at a time. So I will tell you my number one, and then you tell me your number one, and we'll talk about it. So my number one said, I am self-deprecating.
Okay.
I live in perpetual fear and self-doubt, and I'm trying to figure it out. But I don't know why. I cannot help it. I have to make fun of myself. It's like compulsion to talk crap on myself. And I can't tell if that's like a good thing or a bad thing, but it's like my word vomit.
Okay. Not at all what I had written. I had written that I am Bolivian. That's what I think is really important. I'm Bolivian. I was born in Bolivia. I was raised in the United States. I'm a child of immigrants. I am an immigrant. I think that's a huge part of who I am as a person. I'm not as self-deprecating as Teresa is.
I guess, you know, you said you're Bolivian. I'm Vietnamese. And that's really funny that I didn't even write down like my ethnicity as part of my identity. But yeah, I'm Vietnamese American, family of refugees from the Vietnam War. That's definitely shaped who I am. Which is probably part of why I'm also self-deprecating, like feeling like you constantly belong, but mm-hmm. don't belong. I don't know if like the Asian part of me is why I'm also fearful, but there's probably something to unpack there.
Culture is huge.
I know it is.
Teresa, you were born where?
LA.
She's an LA native.
Hello. What's your face? Where were you born?
I was born in Bolivia, Sucre, Bolivia, to be exact.
That's really cool.
But it's important. You're a West Coaster.
I am.
So that's another part of your identity completely.
Yeah. Why aren't you self-deprecating?
I make fun of myself, but I love to be silly.
Yeah. You are silly. It's probably a good thing that you're not self-deprecating. I need to be more ninja status like you. Like fear. You're fierce, though. You're super fierce.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
If I was in a fight, I'd want you by my side.
Oh, my God. You're so... Sure. I appreciate that. I think that's a good thing. But, you know, sometimes I have to be cautious with that. I can hurt people's feelings.
You would be so good in a fight. I would be like, yeah, she's got my back.
You're hilarious.
All right. Number two.
Okay. Number two, I said family is hugely important to me. And that is in itself cultural for me.
Yeah. Family is important to me too. Wow. I'm such a dick. Any of this crap, even though they're so important to me. My family is so important to me.
So what did you write?
Oh my God. I said I use, it's totally related to the first one. I said I use humor to deflect everything.
Yeah, you do.
It's kind of like you're being silly. I can't be serious, which is really hard, which is why it's hard to do this, because it feels like it should be very serious, but everything that comes out of my mouth or that pops into my head is probably inappropriate to say. Maybe you should know that we're recording this on radio, but America and I are watching each other. Yeah. And every time I have an inappropriate thought, I literally have to look at America and be like, oh, we're being serious right now. So I'm going to try and be serious right now.
Well,
it is my family. I mean, my dad is kind of a ham. I also use really extreme, inappropriate things to deflect things too. Because if somebody wants to talk about something serious, I'll just go to the most extreme, stupid thing you can say. And then the conversation's done, which is great. It's
perfect. You're in a totally different direction.
Yeah, bye. That's where we're going now.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, Teresa.
I know, Jesus.
No, but I think, you know, when you think about family, we're immigrants. That's a huge part of my identity. Like, that's something that I'm consistently thinking about. They keep me grounded.
My family is important because it's actually related to my number three.
What is it?
Which is that I love food. And my family feeds me. And in our culture, like, everything is about food.
Yeah.
Like, even like the first thing you say when you meet somebody should be like, what can I feed you? Like, come into my house, say hello. What can I feed you right now? And like, how much you love your mom is like how much you ate her food. You know, like if I cleared my plate and I showed my mom that I cleared my plate, she'd be like, oh, you love me and I love you. And literally my mom never said I love you like my whole life, which is like a whole thing. Like not being able to use words of affirmation is a whole thing. But my mom fed me my whole life. And literally when I come home and say hello to my mom, like she doesn't say I love you. She's like, how can I cook for you? And that is how she says I love you.
But that's a lot of people, dude. That's a lot of people. I can totally tell my mom I love her and she'll be like, I love you too. But then she'll probably be like, what's wrong?
Oh, yeah. You know? That is the first time I said I love you to my mom. I was like 22 years old and I came into her room and I was like, hi, I just want to tell you I love you, because I was practicing like how to say these words that kind of hurt my throat.
Yeah.
I was like, mom, I love you. And she looked at me and she was like, what is wrong? I think she thought I was pregnant. She's like, something must be wrong with you.
Right. Because right now. Our families, really in many cultures, right, they don't function in that space. They function in a space of, what can I provide for you?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, can you just give me a hug? That's all I need. But that's not always going to happen.
Yeah.
So
what's your number three?
My number three is that I'm very straightforward, which can be both good and bad. It just depends on the situation.
Well, see, that's why we kind of make a good pair, because I'm going to want to steer us off because this is all really weird for me. And you're gonna bring us back.
Yeah.
Give it to us free. Yeah. I like it.
Yep.
This worked out really well. I wasn't anticipating this, but.
Okay. My number four is that I've always wanted to help people. So that kind of connects it all for me.
What does that look like?
It's something that has been with me like forever. I've always been the person that people would just come naturally and just be like, hey, America, I got to tell you something. And then I would help in some way. I tend to be like, I try to be a problem solver, which isn't always the best thing. But at the end of the day, I got into counseling and all psychology and all that because I thought, we're all dealing with this stuff. And within the Latino community, there isn't enough discussion about this, which I didn't realize until so many years later, you know, after I was like, yeah, I definitely want to help people. But now it's like, dude, we don't talk about these things in our communities, you know? So now it's even more so a passion that it's like, let's do this. There's more people out there that need help. And that's why I continue to do what I'm doing.
That's nice. It's funny because I became a social worker because I actually really wanted to work with kids in the foster care system. In my past work, I've definitely done a lot of that stuff. Like I worked with kids in the foster care system, child welfare. It's the hardest job I ever had in my entire life. But when I found mental health and I started working with adults with mental health who are homeless, I think I found where I really wanted to be in my life. So when I was in and out of MHA, because I've worked for like MHA LA and I worked for MHA Orange County. And every time I've moved, I've kind of connected to an MHA. And with MHAs, I did a lot of direct service. And I really fell in love with working with people who have mental health problems and are trying to figure out life. So it's where I finally felt like, oh, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
I mean, I used to do counseling with youth. And I always thought, this is where I want to be. I want to help young people.
Yeah.
But then inevitably, right, because young people are connected to families and parents. And I started thinking about how can I help other people? Because
yeah,
whatever struggles are happening there, sometimes you just don't even know like what direction to head in.
In mental health, I feel like it's the one place where you're struggling with an illness, where when you come out of it, because it's so connected to your heart and your struggle and your personhood, that when you work through that stuff and you come out on the other side, like life can be really beautiful in a way that may be different from diabetes, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that Rocky thing, you know, you're like at the top of the stairs, you're like, dude, I did it. Yeah.
So my number four is that I have learned to love myself.
Oh, that's nice. That's really good. That's really important.
I don't know why I wrote that. It was like, it was, as I wrote it, it was surprising, but probably because my first two was about, you know, my avoidance and like how much I'm like always fearful. But I really have, I feel like I've learned to love myself, and it took a long freaking time. And even when like I'm going through a lot of stress, it's obviously still a struggle, right? To not go back to this old place that I might have been. But I do. I feel like I can say to myself, like, I have learned to love myself and feel more confident in knowing who I am.
Loving yourself is really important.
Yeah. It's weird to say that. I mean, to say even the words, I love you, like we said, are mm-hmm. weird. I think it's even harder to say, oh, I love myself. it feels weird to say it, but I know it's true.
I think you have to get to a place where you, for whatever reason, you have to come to that. You tell me that I'm like a certain way or whatever, but I'm only this way because of all the things that I've lived through, right? So I'm shorter, for people that don't know this, right? I'm like short. I'm 4'11". I've been 4'11" like forever. And because I'm a small person, I think I tend to be louder. I don't know, maybe because people didn't hear me when I was younger. I don't know. So then it's like I'm more in your face because it doesn't matter. I've made my place regardless, right? So I had to learn how to love myself with everything that I am, because there's no other me.
Yeah.
What I like about though this conversation is that it's only you and me on this, but we are representing the people that are also like behind what MHA is. And there's not many of us. There are like 27 of us at MHA National, which is not a huge group. But each one of us is very unique in our experiences, in our views. But we're all in this together because we believe in this greater mission, I think, of believing and changing the world. And all of us, for whatever reason, are connected to that.
God, I'm just happy I can change my pants. I don't set standards that high.
I set standards that high.
I'm a winner every day. Today I changed my pants.
I'm happy for you. And she's wearing a clean shirt today. Yay, Teresa.
We couldn't figure out a fifth thing because maybe we're both in the middle of this thing that's the journey of life and we're figuring out who we are. So it's hard to know who you are. And I think that what I also love about MHA and this podcast and kind of processing through this is there's a lot. I think the discussion is making sure that we're always like giving ourselves total space to just, there's no right or wrong. Everybody's just trying to figure out their crap.
Yeah.
We don't know who we are. We can't even figure out a fifth thing. And we're old. Like America, you and I are old, dude.
We're not that old. Really, you make us sound like we're 80.
I feel old, like in the world of social media and that who I know comes to our website, maybe not who might listen to this podcast, but I feel like we're fairly old.
So we want you guys to join us on this journey, because that's what it is. It's us chatting about all kinds of things that deal with mental health, deal with mental illness, deal with life, us trying to figure stuff out. And hopefully along the way, you can get some information that's helpful to you. And if not, tell us what you want to hear from us, because we're open to it.
We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, and I hope somewhere in there, there's a nugget that's helpful. If you go to mhascreening.org and you're browsing around there, there's a box somewhere on that website that says, tell us your thoughts, you know, like it's just a box. Tell us what you think. Feel free to go in there and send us a little snippet. Or if you're checking out our website, our main website, www.mentalhealthamerica.net, you can also look up all the staff and obviously send America or I a direct email.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bye.
So remember, keep fighting in the open.